commission of inquiry into the
Clicquot.
Into Unicut.
No,
yes, he was. Oh, yeah, okay. So, yes, but yes, with respect right, to the goings on.
Mr. Hart.
Yes, with Mr. Hart
and the boys and girls.
And now we have him here in studio, Mr. Afro Rimon. Good afternoon to you, sir.
Well, good afternoon. It seems that I don't know what time it is. This broadcast is necessary so we can put our listeners in tune to what time it is. You know? Thanks for having me here.
Yeah.
I know I'm with Chris, I'm with Shoma, and I'm with
Clifford
Lehman. And of course, everybody is wearing a smile, but it's a very serious matter for discussion. Because what we are about to discuss, listeners, is in fact the most corrupt episode in the history of our country. The most corrupt episode in the history of our country is that bailout signed by the government on the 30th of January 2009 to bail out the various creditors for the CL Financial Group, which failed. It collapsed. The creditors, a big fancy accountant's word, it just means people that Clicquot and them and CL Financial and them, they had money for those people. Whether those people were bankers, whether those people were policyholders, whether those people were depositors, whether they were EFPA, people that the Clicquot and them had money for, they are the creditors. And in fact, the deal that the then government signed, that deal and the circumstances surrounding that deal are now being examined in the Coleman Commission down at the Winshaw Building at Richmond Street. At the moment, I'm supposed to appear there as a witness. I'm the next witness in line after Mr. So Michael Caballo.
So you need to be careful what you're saying then?
Not at all.
Okay. Mr. Raymond, while you're saying that it has been investigated, the legislation has already been passed.
We're dealing with overlapping scenarios, you know, where universes collide. And in fact, people who are into physics and science fiction, we're dealing with a series of singularities here. It may seem like a mixed metaphor, but you could have a series of singularities in Trinidad and Tobago. So in fact, we have things happening all at the same time.
Right.
Last week, our parliament voted on Wednesday. The lower house of the parliament, the House of Representatives, voted 29-9 in favor of the two legislative proposals tabled by Minister of Finance Winston Dukoran. And on Friday, the upper house, the Senate of our parliament, voted to support, and I think all the independent senators voted in support of it, all the government senators voted in support of it, and the PNM senators abstained. And in that case, we had a situation where we voted, both houses of parliament have approved Mr. Dukoran's legislative proposals to, I suppose we could call them, the final solution to the bailout scenario. You see, it's a very complicated series of situations, but I don't think it's actually a final solution. I think it will in fact complicate matters going forward, and maybe we'll talk about that as we continue with this discussion.
I don't know if I may be jumping the gun.
Sure, man, jump.
But what is the similarities between this and Bernie Madoff?
That's not a big jumper, but you see, what's interesting is
because
that
we hear about Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, I'm not sure it was a Ponzi scheme. You see, and I myself, I've written a tremendous amount about it. As I said, I'm next in line to give evidence to the Commission of Inquiry. And I myself, there are certain phrases that have been bandied about by people. One of them is Ponzi scheme. The other one is about greedy investors and so on. I have never used any of those phrases. Okay, let me be really clear. I don't think it was a Ponzi scheme. I think it was a large investment company called Clicquot. The founder's nephew took over. That is Lawrence Dupree. He was a nephew of the... In fact, he was the second cousin of Cyril Dupree, who was the founder of Clicquot. And he took over and he had a different vision, and him and his lieutenants put that vision into play. And that vision was so broad and so expansive that without the proper controls, without the proper measures in place, you could end up taking a ship. Something that you could do. Let me explain to you something. Something that you could do on a sailing boat. You and your partners taking a simple sailing or a simple rowboat. If you start to go at a high speed, like those boats that are in the Great Race going to Tobago, you will end up on the rocks. You could end up in Tobago, but 9 out of 10 of them, without the proper controls, you will end up on the rocks. And if we listen to the testimony that's taking place right now, live on our TV, since Monday, Mr. Michael Caballo, who was the last group financial controller of the group, Mr. Caballo, is been speaking. And what is very clear from Caballo's testimony, and I'm sure other people will speak to it as the inquiry unfolds, is the sort of lack of elementary controls. You know, so some of the things were in place, but the point I'm making is that when you operate at that speed And in that volume of business, if all of the things aren't in place, you will crash.
So at the companies, okay? At the companies level, not at the government level, at the companies level, mm-hmm. who should be held accountable for some of these elementary things not being put in place, or seeing it not being put in place, or not doing anything about it and just going along? Despite Mr. Caballo saying that, yes, Mr. Dupre, he was very persuasive and all of that, are probably commanding and demanding and what have you. Who should be held accountable?
Well, let's be really clear about this show, and that's a good question. Who is to blame? Where does the buck stop, okay? And the fact of the matter is that there's a tremendous conversation going on now, and the two names that keep coming up over and over is Lawrence Dupre and Andre Montai. And you can understand why those two names keep coming up over and over. And I am sure that in terms of what has happened here and so on, a serious amount of responsibility rests with those two individuals. And the inquiry will determine what extent the responsibility is. I mean, I'm not a lawyer. We haven't heard all the evidence yet. But a lot of responsibility must lie with the two of them. But the point I've also made is that however brilliant they were, however persuasive they were, the fact is that they could not have done what they did. Because it was a huge company. 65 companies comprised CL Financial. There were tens of thousands of employees. There were 650 salespeople in Clico. And the point is, there must have been hundreds of people, directors, auditors, accountants, attorneys, actuaries. A circle of responsibility, a series of circles of responsibility. So yes, you could put two men at the center and point a finger, which is a nice Trinidadian sport. Yeah. And it's good to name people, okay?
You know what I
mean? But I'm saying that it must be more than that. You know responsible thing, it must be more than that.
I would like to explain. Tell us, what is the difference between CL Financial and Clico? Because there's a difference there.
Yes. CL Financial is the parent company, which was established to hold, is what in corporate practice you call a holding company. It's a company that in and of itself, sure, like I mean Ansa Makhal is an example of a holding company, and there are many others. I mean, this radio station I'm sitting in is part of a group of companies that belong to a particular family, and they have a holding company somewhere up there that in and of itself doesn't actually do very much apart from hold the shares and control the operations of the various companies. So that's what CL Financial would have done. And there was a range of things that were within the CL Financial group. And one of the limbs of it was, of course, finance. So you would have had companies like Clico. You would have had companies like British American Insurance. The Republic Bank shares were in that wing of the company. You would have had things like Clico Investment Bank. You would have had Caribbean Money Market Brokers. Those all would have been parts. Different ownerships, yes? I think Clico was 100% and British American might have been 80-something percent. Different ownerships. CL Financial had majority ownership. I think Republic, it's a lot more than that. It's maybe closer to 60% and so on, you see?
I just wanted to also focus a bit on the legislation and the state bonds that, you know, that
the recent legislation.
Legislation. Sure. We look at our policyholders and our investors. Do you think they are happy in the circumstances of things and but what is being offered now?
Well, That's a tough question. I think what the way Minister Dukoran explained it, he explained it that it was 65 cents in the dollar last year when he offered it. And the current offer is now 92 cents in the dollar. Yeah. Now, I've read some analyses that are very skeptical about whether it really is 92 cents. I myself, to be very frank, have not put a lot of time into figuring out that side of it. I focus on some other sides of it. But I think that people must be happy that there is some sort of sense of closure. It seems to be an improved offer. Having said that, there's a danger, and we have to be alert to danger. We can't come on to a show like this and purely use it to bash people. We have to alert people to danger, because I tell you what the danger is. Let me take you all through it. As I started off saying, this is the most corrupt situation in the country's history. Throughout the passage of the bailout, there's been a tremendous amount of corruption, and coming forward into this new scenario with these two new laws, we have a new set of possibilities we need to be very, very alert to. On the one hand, let me give it to you all in a sketch. You want it straightforward. On the one hand, you have an apparatus that is designed to satisfy the claims of all of those policyholders who are disgruntled. Let's reduce that apparatus to one person. So there's one man sitting in a chair in a room. Outside of the room in the street, there are 16,000 people who want to get their money back. Those are the policyholders. We're going good so far. There's one doorway they have to pass through to come into the room to deal with that man. And through this law, our parliament passed last week, I explained, on Wednesday, the lower house, on Friday, the Senate. Two things have happened. Number one, $10.7 billion are now on the table in front of that one man. He can pay out the money to people who have claims, the right. ones in the street, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, obviously, we know that he doesn't have 100 cents in the dollar to give everybody in the street. Because if he did, they wouldn't need to do the second part. And the second part is the part that stops them suing the central bank.
Speaking about suing the
now,
central
bank... No, hold on. Let me finish my point. Let me finish my point, sure, if you don't mind. The point I want to make is this. What do you think is going to happen next? We have an apparatus that has enormous power with which those 16,000 people must deal. And that apparatus, from what I understand, the Parliament of Pass, I'm subject to correction, is now insulated from challenging the courts. So, what is the supper situation where you, Clifford, you and the man do real good, while he was in school together, his kickball together, you get 100 cents on your dollar. And he never liked me, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And I get 62 cents on the dollar. Even if you come and tell me and you show me your check,
you
I can't take anybody to court.
It,
what
yeah.
is the mechanism for review? What yeah. is the mechanism for checking that this thing is taking place in a straightforward fashion?
Yeah.
And these are the concerns. These are the concerns.
To bring before this House an amendment to the Limitation Act to ensure that citizens' right of action are not extinguished.
Well, I would like to see that, because I what I understand will happen now, and from all the commentary I've read, and I've read a considerable amount of commentary in the press, okay? What I've read and what it leads me to believe is that, in fact, the right which existed before this legislation to sue has been extinguished. That's what I understand. Okay? And I'm just saying that if that is the case, we need to be very careful that we don't end up in a sort of a situation that is even more unclear and possibly even more corrupt in terms of people's financial rights being played with.
Financially, well, what effect it can have on the country, the economy, and the well-being? I'm thinking about people's mental health as well. You know, I'm sure people must be having some big, those investors must be probably having sleepless nights and stress and what have you. Why some people want to say they should have took responsibility and realized what was happening, and it's their own risk. It's their own risk. What do you think the effect it will have on the country going forward?
Well, I think the effect on the country going forward is quite unclear. I think it's likely to be a negative effect, to be quite frank. Because what we are dealing with is an absolutely immense expenditure of money. We're dealing with $10.7 billion that the Minister of Finance has now got permission to borrow by way of issuing bonds. And in fact, what is missing for me, let me deal with your point, Shoma. Shoma, you ask a very important question. What is missing for me is a proper accounting. Let's go back to the principle. When we were sold this bailout, and this is when the PNM administration was there, when we were told that there's a bailout and it was necessary, what we were told was this. We were told that, look, this is a big company and is in trouble and is too big to fail. We were told that, in fact, people have money inside there and they need to get their money. We were told that the state would put money inside, and that way the people would be able to get back their money. We were told that the state would get refunded the money by selling certain assets. In other words, we were told that the company fundamentally had assets to cover the expenses.
Right.
Here we are now, over 2.5 years later, and the Parliament has just approved, it's now a new law. Its president hasn't assented yet, but the Parliament has now approved a law which in fact gives the minister permission to borrow an immense sum of money to repay those creditors. And in fact, we still haven't had the accounts. So the fundamental proposition everything was based on, the idea everything was based on, is that we'll put $10 in, give Mary back her $10, and then we'll sell $10 of the assets Mr. Dupree had. So the treasury will get back its $10. That appears to have gone out of the window, to use polite language. That appears to have gone into, what they call it, the mists of history. That's gone down in history. Because in all of the discussion that the Minister of Finance was advancing in Parliament and so on and so on, I didn't hear anybody discuss any accounts. We haven't even got an explanation for why they have no accounts. And yeah. that is very shallow water for the country, because the country is borrowing an immense amount of money to repair a small number of people.
Taxpayers have to
okay? pay and in fact, it's quite unclear to me how we are going to get back that money.
What about Quico, the assets of Quico and the continuation of Quico?
We don't know. We literally don't know. Because we don't have any accounts. We literally don't know. I don't think Quico or British American have particularly good futures going forward, because the companies have really disappointed a lot of investors and insurers and so on. And of course, in the financial industry, confidence is the main thing. And if you disappoint people, they look elsewhere. It's just reality.
Yeah. But you know what puzzling me as well, and a caller called earlier on today and gave his impression of it, and he was very emotional about it. We are reading about the goings on of Clico and CL Financial and the people that looking at the inquiry on television, and you're hearing about things that people did. And I'm asking myself, and I'm sure lots of people are asking themselves as well, hasn't a crime been committed?
Of course.
Why these people not facing a judge and jury? You know, you've seen situations where people writing checks to themselves, millions of dollars, money that they got from the government that was supposed to bail out. You see people taking that money and use it as to pay themselves some big salaries and all sort of things. The thing with the former Minister of Finance, you know, aren't these things a crime?
Yeah, many crimes were committed. Let's be sure about it.
Yeah, so, but it appears to me...
I
don't know, probably, because it appears to me as though that's normal. These people can walk freely and go about the business as normal, and, you know...
Let's be clear, there's a tremendous amount of work that has gone on, coming from my end, on this question about the crime and so on, and the white collar crime. That work could be found on my blog. That is afraraymond.com. And in fact, I could say to you that this is a very Trinidadian sport, but then again, it's not, because if you even look at the North American scandal and North American collapse, very few of the executives there, of course we have the examples of Stanford and Madoff that we speak about all the time, but very few of the executives there, because the collapse was far wider than those two companies. Very few of the executives there have really been punished, or hardly anybody's been sent to prison and so on. And that, while North America and these developed jurisdictions could be of some assistance to us in some things, we need to develop our own sense of things, you know. The Trinidadian way of doing things is what we said: A for apple, B for butt,
C for yourself.
That's right. Very good. Go to the top of the class. But the point about it is that we need to really recognize that these are crimes. When we have a discussion about crimes, or in fact, in the recent parlance now, since the 21st of August, we have a discussion about gangs and anti-gang legislation, and of course, we have the power of detention and the power to seize evidence. And so, I mean, I've said it before in another place. I think last Friday I was on TV. I was saying, in fact, some of those powers, people should consider using some of those powers. We need to expand the discussion of what is a crime. What is a gang? Okay? What does it mean? As far as I understand, a gang is a group of people who get together for the execution of a criminal enterprise.
No, you have to be wearing a three-quarter pants and a white vest.
Not a jacket and tie. Okay.
You have to be showing cheeks.
Yes. Showing cheeks. And not smiling cheeks.
Yeah, no, not those.
So much more to talk, so much to say. I just wanted to ask, it's
3 o'clock from the jump. We'll continue with the discussion until we see Mr. Norrie.
Okay, right. I just wanted to ask something. We now hear Mr. Montaigne name, you know, and it's attributing to so many things and so many large figures. Yes. But I remember, I think earlier this year, he had filed some civil lawsuit. No, it is saying that Andrew Montana's private investment company, Stone Street Capital, have filed the defense of a civil lawsuit brought against them by the central bank.
Yes.
He have any defense in it? Does he have any defense in all of this?
It's a very complicated question to answer quickly in a show. He's represented by skilled attorneys, and I'm sure they would have put together a very robust attempt at a defense. It wouldn't be anything slight. Okay? People of that caliber aren't represented by lightweight attorneys or anything like that.
He'd
be represented at a very capable level. Okay, I can't say more. I've not read a lot about that case. I know the case you're talking about is Stone Street Capital with the shares and the home mortgage bank. I didn't really read a lot about that one.
That's another confusing thing that you have to wonder, what is this, a cartoon or something? What's going on here?
It's really happening.
Professor Raymond, you know about dollars, you know about figures. You might not have much like these guys, right?
No, I don't.
But you're right. You know, it's mind-boggling. What people just want to do with all our money? Maybe a stupid question. It's mind-boggling. Tell me a 90 million, 100 and something. Explain it to us. Explain it to the layperson.
You see, those things
are You're already living a comfortable life. You already have money. Your children already get everything fixed.
Those things are not really salaries. Let's understand. Those things are not really, really salaries.
No.
What happens there is that you have a serious amount of money coming out of the company that allows an individual to build up their own profile and do their own investments and so on. And at that point, you see, you get a question of himself. You get into a problem, a question of himself telling himself, they are in a position to set their own salary because of the number of shares you have in the company, any kind of influence you have in the company. It's quite a unique investment situation, you know? And it could even be recommending the dividend to the board and so on, which
so
is because you're a shareholder. All kinds of lovely things.
They're putting out the budget of the
country. They're doing nice things for themselves.
Nice things. All kinds
of lovely things. And what we need to get to in this is to understand really clearly, because this is the important point. CL Financial was not a company that was making jam. They weren't making shoes. They weren't making headphones for radio DJs. CL Financial was a company that was the pinnacle of the Caribbean's leading conglomerate. Let us be very clear to understand it was a conglomerate, and let us speak plainly, run by black people, by African people. Let us speak plainly about it, okay? CL Financial was also a company that its largest profile in terms of the community of the Caribbean was in terms of investments. People had trust with them, and that's why I made the point about it not making jams or boots or headphones. They actually made you believe that they were a good place to place your investments, okay?
They
manufactured things as well. They had manufacturing concerns.
Do you think that
liquor and methanol and so on?
Do you think Mr. Dupre was too much of a risk taker?
It seems so. And this is the point I was coming to, because when someone persuades you that they're a good place to place your investments or to invest your future as in terms of your pension, what they are telling you is that they have the formula, they have the correct balance between risk and reward. They would know when to take a chance with your money. They would know when to hold back. They would know when to bet on this horse or that horse. You don't have experience with the track. They would know about the track. And at the end of 25 years of leaving your money with them, you could walk out with a good pension in your pocket and live a good retirement. And in fact, what all of this shows, you see, there's a paradox at the center of the whole thing. What all of this shows, all of this discussion that's going on now on TV with Caballo and some of this stuff, and it'll come out, more will come out in weeks to come. What all this shows is that, in fact, there was a tremendous miscalculation about risk and reward. Because if the risk and reward had been correctly calculated, we wouldn't be listening to what we're listening to here. This complete fiasco.
Well, I wait with bated breath to see your testimony
in the
Commission of Inquiry into KIKO.
Thank you so much for putting it in layman's terms here for us, to help us understand, because
And I think we'll have to invite him back again, because there's so much we had to get through this KIKO thing. Definitely have to come back for us to talk some more.
Yeah, we'll be back. We'll be back. Just tune into afroraymond.com to get news of what's happening. Thank you very much for having me, and you all have a good afternoon.
Okay, same to you.
Thank you. Okay, good day. Bye-bye.
All right. With that said,